please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Top stories this hour. Russia's U.S. ambassador says Moscow's diplomatic missions have been co-blockaded with their bank accounts closed and staff members receiving threats. The final results from France's presidential runoff show Emmanuel Macron has won a second term, beating his far-right contender, Marine Le Pen. Also, Yemen makes a new offer to the Saudi-led coalition via the United Nations for the release of 200 prisoners from each of the warring parties before Eid al-Fitr. Hello and welcome. This is World News. Thank you for joining us. Russia says the operation of its embassy in Washington is blockaded, its bank accounts are closed, and its staff is receiving threats. The Russian ambassador to the United States said the personnel have been receiving threats by phone and mail. Anatoly Antonov said at times even the exit from the embassy was being blocked due to rather large protests. He said there have been acts of vandalism and paint was thrown on the embassy building. Attacks on Russian missions abroad increased after Moscow launched a war on Ukraine in late February. Russian embassies in Europe have also come under pressure, and more than 300 staff have been expelled from European capitals. Moscow has also responded in kind. Ukraine has proposed a special round of talks with Russia to discuss the fate of civilians and troops still trapped at a steel plant in the flashpoint city of Mariupol. A Ukrainian presidential advisor says the proposed talks would aim to establish an immediate ceasefire in the port city. Ukrainian officials claim Russian forces have attempted to storm the Azovstal plant where people are held up, but Moscow says it doesn't intend to capture the plant in the city, which has already fallen into the hands of Russian forces. Meanwhile, Russia says it has pounded 9 Ukrainian military targets, including 4 arms storage depots in the Kharkiv region. Separately, Moscow reports that the Ukrainian army has shelled a village in Russia's Belgorod region. A Russian official has been quoted as saying that there were no casualties or damage from the attack. And in France, final results from the presidential runoff show incumbent Emmanuel Macron has beaten his far-right contender Marine Le Pen with a comfortable margin. Macron secured 58% of the vote, while Le Pen garnered 42%. In his victory speech, Macron pledged a renewed method to govern France. He also vowed to find a response to the anger of voters who backed his rival. This as riot police fired tear gas at protesters in central Paris who were angry over his re-election. Meanwhile, Le Pen admitted defeat but promised to continue the fight. European leaders were quick to congratulate Macron. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said the 27-nation bloc can count on France for 5 more years. And German Chancellor Olaf Scholz said Macron's re-election is a vote of confidence in Europe. And people take to the streets of the British capital, London, to mark International Quds Day. They've expressed solidarity with Palestinians who face an intensifying Israeli crackdown. The demonstrators gathered in front of the Home Office from where they marched toward Downing Street. They called for international action, including sanctions, to end Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories and its growing aggression. Among the protesters were Jews who denounced Israeli atrocities and torched its flag. Back in 1979, the late founder of Iran's Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, designated the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan as International Quds Day. The occasion is observed on the last Sunday of Ramadan in some countries, including the UK. This weekend, Quds Day rallies are also planned in the US, Australia, and Canada. A senior leader of Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says the occupied West Bank is following the example of the Gaza Strip in standing up to the Israeli regime. Mahmoud al-Zahar made the comment in an exclusive interview with Iran's Arabic news network Al Alam. He pointed out to the latest tensions at Al-Aqsa Mosque in the occupied West Bank. Al-Zahar said similar tensions last year and the resistance's support for Al-Aqsa led to Gaza's 11-day war with Israel. He added that war challenged the theory of Israel's security. Al-Zahar stressed that resistance forces are ready to sacrifice their most valuable assets to drive the Israeli regime out of the occupied Palestinian territories. The Hamas official also talked about the normalization of ties between some Arab states and Israel. He said none of those states have achieved their goals. The United Nations is demanding impartial, independent investigations into escalating violence in occupied Palestine. The spokeswoman for the UN Human Rights Office is gravely concerned about the growing atrocities and the excessive use of force by the Israeli military. Ravina Shemdasani says numerous videos have raised serious concerns about the conduct of the Israelis, which is widespread, unnecessary, and indiscriminate. According to the official, many Palestinians have been beaten, shot with sponge-tipped bullets, and sustained serious injuries. Over the past month, Israeli forces have killed and wounded scores of Palestinians and arrested hundreds in the occupied territories, including at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound.
Hey everyone, welcome to another Hashtag Trending with me, your host Ali Reza. The situation is escalating once again in the occupied Palestinian territories as Israeli forces once again attack the Muslim holy site of Al-Aqsa Mosque on the third Friday of the, again, Muslim holy month of Ramadan. Scores of Palestinians were wounded after Israeli troops raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound while thousands of worshippers had gathered there for their early morning prayers. Israelis used tear gas and rubber bullets to disperse the Palestinians. Meanwhile, social media is filled with comments, pictures, and videos of the atrocities that the Israelis are committing against the Palestinians in the occupied territories and especially in the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. They try to reflect the reality of what is happening on the ground in Al-Quds while the Western media, Western mainstream media, is busy with the war in Ukraine. Our first tweet of the day comes from Sara Ray. She said, Israel is using drones to drop tear gas on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. It's Friday and men and women and children from across Palestine have come to pray at the holy site. Next tweet comes from Omar Qarayeb. He says, attacking unarmed worshippers at their place of worship in a holy month, injuring over 40 of them, including medics, storming into a place of worship and using excessive force. Welcome to the Israeli occupation forces and its moral army. Aisha said, Israeli occupation forces impede the arrival of large numbers of Palestinians heading from the West Bank to perform the third Friday prayer of Ramadan in the blessed Al-Aqsa Mosque Friday morning. As Israeli forces grow more aggressive against the Palestinians become more determined in standing united and defending the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They say that unity and determination and resistance is the key in resisting against the Israeli occupation, and this is the key to deterring them from implementing their malicious schemes. Leila Barhoun says, while we teach the world the justice of our cause, while we defend our truth, while we protect the identity of a stolen land, while we make the most of the little we have, we walk proud and undefeated. Lola Kantika says, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. A little girl chanting, Palestine will be free, during a protest outside the Israeli embassy in London. Thank you. Pollyanna has our next tweet. There's nothing holy about Israel. The sooner the Western countries realize this, the better. And it's not anti-Semitic to say this. We're speaking on behalf of the Palestinians who are Semites. In the face of continued Israeli crimes and atrocities, the Palestinian people pledge to stand united and fight until the oppression of their people is over and their stolen land is freed. Our final batch of comments starts with a tweet by Ayman Arshed. I swear this human chain is more powerful than your weapons, with a really powerful picture attached to it. Jisr Collective says, the revolutionary unified voices of Palestine is heard across the resisting world. Together we will dismantle imperialism, capitalism, and settler colonialism. Our next tweet comes from Ibrahim Abdurrahman Abdi. There is no country called Israel. It's an illegal occupation surviving on veto powers from those who are also war criminals. Thank you. Back to the studio for the rest of the world news.
Welcome back. A conference has been held in the Syrian capital, Damascus, for Palestinian youth. The event was organized amid continuous Israeli crimes against Palestinians in Al-Quds, which was a core subject of the conference. Muhammad Ali from Damascus has the details in this report.
The 16th session of the Quds Conference for Palestinian Youth was held in Damascus. Participants discussed means of uniting Palestinians in service of their cause, hailing resistance operations in occupied Palestine and the people's uprising in the face of Israeli forces.
Our message in this conference is that Palestinian youth outside Palestine are present on the front lines, just like the youth in Quds, Gaza, and the West Bank. Palestinians are uniting. The Sword of Palestine battle reflects this unity, and this conference is one of the results of that battle.
The conference is held in parallel with the International Al-Quds Day, which was set by late Imam Khomeini on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan every year.
The message of Iran on Quds Day is that the only path for regaining Palestinian rights is resistance against the crimes of the Zionist entity. The message of Quds International Day is Islamic unity in the face of Israeli crimes. The track of normalization will not affect regaining Palestinians' rights.
We as Palestinian, Syrian and Arab youth send a message to our people in Quds in Aqsa Mosque that we will support them until the liberation of Palestine, from the sea to the river. Thanks to the Resistance Alliance, today we are more capable of triumphing. And as Imam Khamenei said, Quds will remain the axis.
The final communique called for national unity among all Palestinian factions, as well as re-establishing the PLO with a national plan based on resistance against the Israeli enemy.
Events like this reiterate that Palestinian refugees across the world will never give up their right of repatriation. It's a message to Israel that their struggle will never stop until ending the Israeli occupation of Palestinian lands. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
Israeli artillery shells southern Lebanon after a projectile allegedly fired from there hit northern occupied territories. The Israeli military claims a rocket was fired from southern Lebanon, fell near the Israeli town of Shalomi on Sunday night. It says the rocket landed in an open area and that no rocket siren was activated. Small Palestinian factions in Lebanon sporadically fire projectiles on Israel in retaliation for the regime's crimes and deadly crackdown in occupied Palestinian territories. Yemen's National Salvation Government says it's made a new suggestion to the Saudi-led coalition via the United Nations about prisoner swap. The head of Yemen's National Committee for Prisoners Affairs said the offer includes the release of 200 prisoners from each side before Eid al-Fitr. Abdul Qadir al-Murtada added Yemen is waiting for the Saudi-led coalition's response. He stressed that the suggestion would make up for the delay in implementing a prisoner swap agreement. Based on the deal reached last month, hundreds of detainees from both sides were supposed to be exchanged. The National Salvation Government has been running Yemen's affairs since 2015 when President Abdurrahman Mansour Hadi resigned and fled the country. Since then, Yemen has been grappling with a war launched by Saudi Arabia. Thousands of Sri Lankan university students have gathered near the Prime Minister's residence demanding his resignation over the worsening economic crisis. Sunday's protest saw student leaders scaling the fence of Mahinda Rajapaksa's compound in Colombo. That came after police erected barricades on various roads around the capital to stop them from linking up with demonstrators elsewhere. For more than 2 weeks, the island nation has witnessed several mass protests to demand President Gotabaya Rajapaksa and his younger brother, Mahinda, step down. Months of lengthy blackouts, record inflation, and acute food and fuel shortages have sparked public discontent. Sri Lanka is dealing with its worst economic downturn since independence in 1948. At least 168 people have been killed in clashes between rival groups in Sudan's Darfur in the latest bout of deadly violence to hit the restive region. Dozens were also wounded on Sunday in the Krink region of West Darfur. There were fears that fatalities could rise as fighting was still ongoing. The violence broke out on Friday when armed tribesmen attacked the villages of a non-Arab minority community in retaliation for the killing of two tribesmen. Darfur, which was ravaged by civil war, erupted in 2003, has seen a spike in deadly conflict since October last year. The violence was triggered by disputes mainly over land, livestock, and access to water and grazing. Multiple bomb attacks on Hazara community in Afghanistan have left dozens of families in great sorrow. The relatives of the victims called for justice and an end to the violence. Iran has reported its lowest daily tally of COVID deaths since the pandemic began, with only 13 fatalities registered over the past 24 hours. According to the health ministry, out of the total 31 provinces, 21 reported no fatalities. 8 provinces registered one death each, and the rest logged 5 fatalities altogether. Newly daily infections were 528, one of the lowest in the past months. Iran has largely contained COVID thanks to a mass vaccination program. Almost 70% of the population have received 2 doses of a vaccine. Nearly 32% have received a third shot, too. The government opened schools and universities this month after more than 2 years. Well, that does it for this edition of World News. Many thanks for your company. Stay with us.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, salam and welcome to the program. We humans commit sin because of negligence. In other words, we forget God's commands and trespass his red lines. In such cases, God has ordered us to repent and return to the right path. Nevertheless, some of us have repented several times and breached our penitence and committed sins again and again. Some of us have plunged in sins to the extent that we despair of God and do not think of penitence at all. Insistence on sin is very bad, but being disappointed of God's mercy is worse and more reprimanded. God says to the prophet in Ayah 53 of Surah Zumar, "Say, O my servants who have committed excesses against their own souls, do not despair of God's mercy. Indeed, Allah forgives all sins. Indeed, He is the all-forgiving the All-Merciful. This ayah is full of grace and mercy of God. Imam Jafar Sadiq, peace upon him, says, "Be hopeful of God's mercy, the mercy which does not embolden you to disobey Him, and have fear of God, the fear which does not make you desperate of His mercy." God tells the Prophet in Ayah 60 of Surah Ghafir, "Your Lord has said, 'Call me and I will hear you.' Indeed, those who are disdainful of my worship will enter hell in utter humility." This ayah both makes us hopeful of God's mercy and warns against His wrath and punishment. The result of fearing God is giving up sins, and the result of hope in His mercy is to do righteous deeds. Part of ayah 110 of Surah Kahf reads, "Whoever expects to encounter his Lord, let him act righteously." Here, it is clear that hope in God must be accompanied with righteous deeds, otherwise it would be lie. In the month of Ramadan, the individual is permitted to eat and drink of God's blessings from the dusk till the dawn. Having food before the dawn has been recommended as it gives energy to the body. But a common mistake is to have the pre-dawn meal hurriedly. This will cause ailments in both the stomach and the intestines. It will have negative effect on digestive system and will cause reflux of the stomach during the day. Although sleeping is very sweet in pre-dawn hours, it has been highly recommended to have this meal, which is called suhoor or sahari. It is good to regulate the volume of food in iftar in a way that the stomach is ready for another meal before the dawn. Fasting makes the heart luminous, and the individual tastes the sweetness of prayer and supplication with the Lord of creation. Worships in Ramadan make the spirit lighter and leads us to recognize God better. It is the month of adorning the soul and spirit with moral virtues via faith and righteous deeds. The ninth infallible successor of the Prophet, Imam Jawad, peace upon him, has said in a supplication, "O God, O you who administer the affairs and have power over all things, O you who know the betrayal of eyes and what the chest conceal and what the inward hides, O God, place us among those who make intention and follow it with practice, and do not place us among those who are wretched and rely on other than work. O God, heal the diseases of our bodies and help us practice what you have obligated on us so that this month passes while we have fulfilled in it your obligation on us. O God, help us for fasting of this month and keeping vigil at night, and grant us liveliness in this month for performing ritual prayer. And do not deprive us from recitation of the Quran, and facilitate for us the giving of alms. O God, do not dominate chronic diseases, tiredness, ailment, and fatigue over us. O God, give us halal sustenance for iftar. O God, facilitate for us what you have sustained in this month, and pave the way for what you have determined of your affair, and make it halal, pure and clean from sins and evils. O God, do not feed us except pure food, not polluted and haram, and make your sustenance halal for us, devoid of dirt and ailments. Imam Javad, peace upon him, says in another supplication in this month, O God, greet Muhammad and his infallible Ahlul Bayt and accept our fast and join it with good deeds and God-weariness and appreciate our effort and accept our keeping night vigil and the Quran that we have recited and answer out prayers. And guide us to good deed and keep us aloof from hardships and prepare us for easy affairs and elevate our degrees and double our virtuous deeds and accept our ritual prayers so that the month of Ramadan passes by us while you have accepted our fast and keeping night vigil and cleansed and purified our deeds and forgiven our sins and fulfilled our share completely in this month of every goodness, as you are the answerer and near Lord, and you encompass everything.
Food for thought. Hello, dear friends, and we now present some of the last pieces of advice of the first infallible heir of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. I advise you and all my children, my relatives, and whosoever receives this message to be conscious of Allah, to remove your differences, and to strengthen your ties. I heard your grandfather, the Prophet, peace be upon him, say, reconciliation of your differences is more worthy than all prayers and all fasting.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host Musa al-Bahadili, and you are now listening to the program Q&A on Islamic Beliefs. Joining me in the studio today is a dear friend and esteemed guest, Sheikh Murtada Karimi from the Islamic Seminary of Qum. Dear Sheikh, I welcome you and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sheikh. Today we will continue our previous session's topic about why is it that the Imam alayhi salam, he didn't give more money from the treasury to those who had more power to avoid a conflict. Now, we spoke last time of the way that the previous caliphs, they did their governing, shall we say, by giving more money to those that they considered of more importance. Well, when And after 25 years of such a system of governance, it came to be that Imam Ali alayhi salam, he became the caliph by people insisting that he become the caliph. And already from the first day of his governance, he started to give equal shares of the treasury to everybody, poor and rich alike. Of course, he also did help the poor people. We should stress this out. But that was from the money of the zakat and not from the Baytul Mal. Dear Sheikh, there were some points that we didn't get to finish last time. Please expand even further.
Sure. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The last point that I shared in the previous program, as you also referred to, was the fact that in some cases, Imam alayhi salam, when it comes to the poor people, he divided the Baytul Mal, the public treasury, equally for the poor and rich, for the noble companions of the Prophet and other people, for Arabs and non-Arabs, no difference. But he was, in many cases, he helped, many people, especially the poor, from, other ways like charity and zakat. It's been mentioned by Imam Sadiq alayhi salam that once one of the friends of Imam alayhi salam asked him for monetary help, and in his answer, Imam Ali alayhi salam said that يَخْرُجُ عَطَائِي فَأُقَاسَمُكَهُ You need to wait for my salary to come. This is interesting. So Imam Ali alayhi salam also somehow take his salary from Baytul Mal like any other people.
Right.
So he says that for now, I cannot give you from Baytul Mal, the public treasury. When it is time for dividing the public treasury, I take my share from that and then I will give you what you want. From
that's the imam, that's the caliph of the Islamic
that's
Ummah.
The caliph of the, yeah. And interestingly, it's been mentioned that that person said that, no, that's not enough for me, and then he joined Muawiyah.
Interesting.
And this is not only for him. We have other people that, as you mentioned also, for 25 years, they got used to this,
being privileged and being rich.
Exactly, without any Islamic basis. Now, when it comes to Talha and Zubair, first of all, there is no doubt about the fact that these two people, Talha and Zubair, they, at the time of the Prophet, they helped him a lot. These two people were among the first people who converted to the religion of Islam. It's been mentioned, we know that Zubair is the cousin of the Prophet and Imam Ali alayhi salam, and he is among the first eight people who converted to the religion of Islam after Imam Ali alayhi salam and Khadija salamullahi alayha. He was so courageous that he was known as Saiful Islam, the sword of the religion of Islam. Talha is known as Talhatul Khair, is again among the first people who converted to the religion of Islam. And he participated in most of the wars during the time of the Prophet. So we are not neglecting that they did a lot at the time of the Prophet. But does it guarantee the fate and destiny of the people? No. Let me give you some, historical reports about the properties that these two personalities gained at the time of the first three caliphs. So when the Holy Prophet passed away, they were just normal people.
Normal Muslims.
Exactly. When it comes to money and properties, they are just normal people. But in these 25 years, at the time of the first three caliphs, it's been mentioned that, for example, when Imam Ali salam, he came to power, after 25 years, Talha, he had hundreds of slave girls and slaves, hundreds. Right. In Kufa, he had some specific buildings, houses, which were built by specific materials on those days, which only very rich
could afford
to do that. His income from his lands in Iraq on a daily basis was 1,000 dinars. So a normal companion of the Prophet cannot have such an income unless right. you are given all these by the caliphs of the time.
Of course, there's a difference just to mention how much this actually is, because we have a dirham and dinar.
Yeah.
Dirham is silver. Dinar is gold.
Gold, yeah.
So like 1,000 gold coins.
Exactly. He also had about 1,000 horses, and we know how precious one horse was right. at that time. It's been mentioned that when he passed away, his property was a couple of million dinars
worth.
Yeah. So, as a companion of the Prophet...
Like, Sheikh, as soon as you said that he had, 1,000 slave girls, how many slaves?
Hundreds of...
Hundreds. The Prophet's teachings were about freeing the slaves.
Yeah.
So you do not even need to tell me how he's going to end up, because exactly. I can already see there's something wrong here.
Yeah, there's something wrong here. When it comes to Zubair, it's been mentioned that he built luxurious houses in different cities, like in Basra, in Kufa, in Egypt, and other cities. Again, when he passed away, he had thousands of dinars and many horses and so on and so forth.
Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
So this is the new character of these two great companions of the Prophet. Yes, they did a lot, but they also changed a lot after the demise of the Prophet.
Wow, that's very good said, beautifully yeah. said. They also changed a lot.
Yeah, for 25 years, their characters, their nature is changed completely. Such a companion of the Prophet should not ask Imam Ali alayhi salam for more from the public treasury. But right. now the nature has completely changed. So the point is that is it only about public treasury? No. Main concern of Talha and Zubair was not only to have more share from public treasury, so that one may ask that Imam Ali Salam could give them more and right. through that prevent the war. No, it's not only about public treasury. They wanted to play a key role in the government of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And it's been mentioned very explicitly that they went to Imam Ali alayhi salam and, very explicitly asked Imam Ali alayhi salam to make them the governor of Kufa and Basra. One of them wanted to be the governor of Kufa and the other wanted to be the governor of Basra.
So it wasn't enough with economical power, because they were still rich when the imam began.
Rich.
He didn't take their properties.
Exactly.
He let them keep their properties. But they wanted political power.
Mm-hmm. And now, this is the decision of Imam to give, the governorship of two very important cities, and at that time, that is Kufa and Basra, to two people who are, not at all similar to those two companions.
They are not
of the Prophet.
Righteous, they are not just, and they do not
Nothing.
Think for the people.
Yeah.
Right.
So, such a rich people cannot think of poor people. So right. how come Imam Ali Salam can, trust such people?
Exactly.
And give them the power in two cities of Kufa and Basra. It's not only about these two, because at the time of Uthman, he had a kind of, interest in giving the power to his relatives and
right,
close
his family.
Friends and
right.
family members. And in many cities, the people in power were from close relatives of Osman or friends. And when Imam alayhi salam came to power, he dismissed and, I mean, deposed many of them. It's not only about Talha and Zubair.
They were basically nepotists. They were only choosing their family and relatives. Imam alayhi salam came and said, no, it's not about who you are, what your blood is. It's about who you are as a Muslim.
Exactly. So this is the, reality about Talha and Zubair. As I mentioned, maybe we can say for sure that their main concern was not about the public treasury.
Right. It's not because they were living like poor people. They didn't have food and bread to eat.
That's the point.
Right.
Even if Imam Ali Salam gave them more but did not give them the governorship, they may do the same. Initiate the war against Imam Ali alayhi salam.
So this is actually not a conflict because of money and economics. It was actually because they wanted political power.
Exactly. And also it's been mentioned that when they come to this point that in the government, they have no share in the government of Imam Ali alayhi salam, and at the same time, according to some reports, they receive a letter from Muawiyah, who also instigated them to revolt against Imam Ali alayhi salam, and gave them the promise that he will give them governorship.
The governance when he becomes the caliph.
Exactly. Right. So that was the reason that we know the story of the Battle of Jamal and the fact that they went out of the city telling Imam alayhi salam they're going for pilgrimage, and Imam alayhi salam told them that I know your true intention, and the rest of the story. So it's not only about money, it's mainly about having, continuing the life that they were used to it before the time of Imam alayhi salam.
To be fair, dear Sheikh, they were already continuing the life.
Exactly.
I do not understand.
So is it possible for Imam alayhi salam to make these two people as governors of two very important cities? And there is no doubt about the fact that if these two people come to power, it means that Imam alayhi salam is not with justice anymore.
Yes.
So if I may answer this question in one word, Imam alayhi salam is ready to, defend himself in a war, but protect the concept of justice. Because without justice, the whole Islamic society, the whole Islamic government...
And structure, it collapses.
Would be destroyed. But... Right. If you are going to protect the concept of justice, you may have some wars, but at the end of the day, you have protected that very important concept of justice, which meant a lot for Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Right, and just as a final note to our dear listeners, because it is very spread throughout the Muslim community, unfortunately, that Imam Ali alayhi salam, he was a caliph for 5 years, and he waged 3 wars. You're saying he's so warlike, he's so aggressive. And no, in reality, all of these conflicts, they were caused by injustice in the society. They were not only offensive wars, but no defensive wars.
All
for
of them
Islam.
Were defensive.
Right.
And even at the wars of the Prophet, according to some researchers, all
wars
of them
only.
Were defensive.
Yeah. Yes, and with that, we will end today's program because we are out of time. I thank the dear Sheikh for joining us today and for shedding light on this very important historical event. And I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. Until next time, fi amanillah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Aliin wa Husayn wa Hasan. Li Aliin wa Husayn wa Hasan. إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نارا من لبن إن في الجنة نارا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Japanese researchers have developed chopsticks that artificially create the taste of salt. They have done this as part of efforts to reduce high levels of sodium intake in Japan. The utensils look like a typical pair of chopsticks, but with a cable and a mini computer worn on the person's wrist. A mild electrical current transmits sodium ions from food through the chopsticks and into the user's mouth. This enhances the taste of salt, requiring less of it in food to achieve the same good taste.
To prevent severe lifestyle-related diseases or to prevent these diseases altogether, we need to reduce the amount of salt we take regularly. Japanese people tend to ingest a large amount of salt in their diet. If we try to avoid taking less salt in a conventional way, we would need to endure cutting out our favorite foods from our diet or endure eating bland food.
The chopsticks have already been clinically tested. Participants say the device enhanced salty taste of low-sodium food by roughly 1.5 times. The engineers are currently refining the chopsticks and hope to commercialize the product next year. The product was jointly developed by Meiji University professor Homei Miyashita and a beverage holding company. Miyashita is best known for his creation of a TV screen that can imitate various flavors. How long could you work at your job? In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do, and there you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Ortman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Orthman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity.
Iran's National Museum is displaying a collection of artifacts that was stolen decades ago but has finally returned home after a long legal battle. The items, which include sacred figurines, pots and jars, date back to more than 3,000 years ago. They were stolen and sent to the West more than four decades ago. In 1991, the British Museum was seeking to buy the collection from a smuggler residing in Switzerland. The objects, however, were seized by Swiss police and revealed in court in 2008. Since then, Iran had been trying to get the stolen treasures back home.
Under pressure from the Iranian diplomatic apparatus and the official complaints of the National Museum in 2015, the legal process continued, and finally on December 20, 2020, the collection returned to us.
The collection belongs to the northwestern city of Bukhan, which was the home of Manians around the 10th to 7th centuries BC. The Manians were one of the first nomadic tribes to build cities in that area. The director of Iran's National Museum says the effort to recover other stolen artifacts continues. The country is now holding talks with the US and Australia to return ancient objects smuggled over there. Agriculture is no exception when it comes to adapting new technologies in the context of changing climate. Now, French farmers in the northwestern suburbs of Paris grow greens in any season using hydroponic farms. Residents of a housing estate have ditched the traditional way of farming to create jobs for their community. Hydroponic farming is a method of growing plants in water, not in soil. It may sound like it would be a complicated process, but it's actually quite straightforward. The system is made of plastic and uses a rich organic ecosystem. The workers use less water than usual and do not even need a teaspoon of soil. One of the employees describes how they turn barren land into a farm.
It used to be a garage where they stored cars, but since there were no more cars, we used it as a dormitory. We listened to music and watched football matches. We used to meet here to have a bit of privacy and breathe, to hide away for a while. But now that it's become a place of work, I'm happy because I'm working.
Hydroponic farms can be used to grow products of all kinds in any region. In this one, farmers are planting all sorts of things, ranging from Peruvian mint to Vietnamese coriander. They hope that the system can be used to help local residents, especially those who need it the most.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Magic returns to Belgium with a purple carpet of bluebells covering the undergrowth of Hallerbos woods near Brussels. Each spring, this beech forest turns into a bluebell spectacular, turning the area into a natural wonderland. Millions of these blooming flowers sprout up across the 550-hectare woods, filling the air with their sweet aroma. The short but enchanting blooming phase offers nature enthusiasts a one-of-a-kind experience.
It is an outstanding and magical place because whenever we come, there's an amazing atmosphere. The sunrise was truly beautiful this morning, and we know this offers the opportunity to take great photos and decorate our house. It is a great comfort during these tough times.
Visitors can stroll the winding paths and watch rabbits and deer wandering through the woods. The forest floor blooms for a period of 7 to 10 days. After this time, leaves begin to grow on the trees above them, blocking the sunlight from reaching the flowers. The phenomenon of bluebell forest is not uncommon in Europe, but the Hallerbos greenery is unique for the density and beauty of its blossoms. A huge pink moon has glowed over Chilean skies, mesmerizing stargazers and ordinary citizens alike. The full moon was completely visible over the capital, Santiago. The celestial phenomenon is called a pink moon as it appears in April and is named after an American plant, pink plot, that blooms in spring. The pink moon will shine during the weekend through early Monday and may be visible in most parts of the world. The phenomenon also marks the calendar for different religious festivities around the globe.
A batch of autonomous delivery vehicles has been provided to facilitate personnel and volunteers in the streets and communities of Shanghai. The self-driving vehicles distribute supplies to residents in the Chinese megacity, which is now hit hard by the Omicron variant of the coronavirus. The vehicles reduce person-to-person contact and largely lower the risk of infection. A community served by the distribution station has more than 30 apartment buildings and nearly 3,000 residents. The weight of each order is more than 5 kilograms, which puts great pressure on the volunteers to deliver. 49 autonomous delivery vehicles have been sent to communities, colleges, and hospitals in Shanghai to support anti-pandemic and supply work. Sunny skies and spring temperatures made for the perfect setting for the 65th birthday of Fatu, the world's oldest gorilla living at Berlin Zoo. At this age, the Western lowland gorilla is what Berlin Zoo calls almost something of a legend. Gorillas living in the wild have a life expectancy of about 40 years, and at 65, she has been the world's oldest living gorilla for a while. 65 is absolutely extraordinary, and that obviously needs to be celebrated in style.
They mainly get vegetables, and the sugar they receive at most is fruit sugar, and that's what she saw for today in the shape of raspberries and blueberries. They were the decoration on rice cake made of boiled rice, a thin layer of rice and some curd so it sticks together. The bottom was made of a lot of green stuff, then the lion and lettuce.
According to Berlin Zoo, Western lowland gorillas are now an endangered species after their natural habitat was continuously decimated, and therefore fewer and fewer animals live in the tropical rainforest of Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Gabon, and the Republic of Congo. World of Opera is opening its doors to the deaf community for the very first time. The Los Angeles Philharmonic Orchestra has teamed up with the Deaf West Theater to stage a production of Beethoven's only opera, Fidelio, at their home at the Walt Disney Hall. The chorus will be performed by the White Hands Choir, a group from Venezuela consisting of disabled children and young adults who sing as well as sign. The production pairs up a singer and a deaf actor to both inhabit the one role on stage. Having deaf actors perform alongside opera singers, however, has its challenges, not least of which is keeping up the rhythm of the music.
I think probably that there's a lot of tempo that I've been rehearsing. A lot of times when the singers hold the same word, but the next time they say that exact same word in the next few bars, they don't hold it as long. So trying to remember all of those is very difficult. So are they holding this for 4 beats or 2 beats? Or what word is this in this thing?
I feel like the challenge with opera is that it's very fluid and it's not repetitive. The tempos change throughout it, and night to night it even changes. The conductor, you know, kind of changes how he conducts things each night, and so that is something that is challenging.
The opera singers also give small cues to the actors, like opening a letter or sitting down or standing up, to keep them informed where they are in the piece. The deaf cast use theatrical ASL, or